For anybody listening to the recording, this week we'll be talking about personal security, personal continuity, and ledger stuff. Welcome, Sikorin. I just saw you hop in. I'll invite you up in just a moment. But for anybody listening to the recording, as I always say, skip a couple of minutes ahead of time until you start hearing the conversation become fluid, all that good stuff. I'm going to go ahead and get Sam and Sikorin invited up right now. Let me work on that. Okay. Welcome up, Sikorin. Sam, I think I sent you an invite. I'm sending you two invites to make sure because I wasn't sure if that worked.
Howdy, howdy.
How are you doing, man?
Doing pretty good. How about yourself?
Pretty well. I just want to say thank you to both of you for joining my space tonight. I was just in the snack space, and there are like 700 people in there. So I'm like, oh, boy.
Wow.
Yeah. What's up, Christopher? Christoph, sorry. I will invite you up as well. Let me just get him up here real quick.
Can you hear me?
I can. How are you?
Oh, no, it's pretty good. I'll be lurking in the background. I got the kids
cool.
You know, wrapping up dinner and everything, but
I hear.
Looking forward to this space for sure with the ledger stuff. Yeah,
thank you.
Exact same here. I'm watching three of my kids. So
good. It's new Zoom lifestyle, right?
All you guys with the Rugrats running around.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You won't hear my kids because they're all in the pasture. But those are, you know, animals.
Four-legged.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, how are you guys doing, Sam? Everybody, how are you having a good weekend so far?
Yeah, doing good. So far, a good weekend. So almost wrapping it up. But...
Yeah. Just in time for another week to begin.
Just in time for another week.
Yeah, I don't know if the other guys heard me, but I was just in there's a snack space going on with Goofy, the creator, and then Sebastian Guillemot from, you know, DC Spark and people like that are all in there. And there's like 700 people in it. And I'm like, well, might not get many people tonight in my space, but I get it. I get it.
Oh, snack.
Yeah. It's a, I'm not, you know, I don't mess with things like that much, but I am impressed by, the traction, I guess you could say, that it has gained. But
yeah, no, absolutely. I mean I agree. I don't generally get involved with too much of that. I mean, you know, full disclosure, like the first cryptocurrency I ever bought, you know, forever ago was Doge. So I can't say I haven't ever touched them. You know, but after that one blew up and I sold all of it and I have generally stayed away from those type of coins or tokens. I stick to something I think will have value to at least me later on. But
Yeah, same here. I think I got about $5 of Husky and that's it.
That, yeah. $5 in Husky is quite a bit.
That's quite a bit, depending on what you got.
But yeah, I originally grabbed it out of the rug bowl or whatever they called it. So I think it has gone up to like 15 or 20 bucks now. Yeah. So it's doing pretty good for me, I guess.
Yeah.
But I won't buy any more meme coins other than that.
No.
Yeah, I had a Darlington from Lido Nation. He sent me some Husky. I bought some Doge too back years ago, but I bought it really just to have it. I actually still have it. I want it just to say, you know, 50 years down the road if I'm actually still alive. Hey, I have this Doge thing that you young people probably have never heard of, you know? But yeah. Yeah. I don't really get into it really because I'm just a horrible trader and I can maybe long-term trade because you just buy it and wait, but day trading or routinely trading, not my cup of tea at all.
Yeah. And I think for me, that's the big reason I don't, you know, and like, and I'm not trying to say it just to be a patsy, but like, you know, like I don't care if people do, obviously, and in, well, not really necessarily the topic of this space today, spaces we've had before. But, you know, being careful of rug pulls and scam coins and all those, for sure. But yeah, no, I agree. The main reason I don't really get involved is I don't have the time or attention to spend, you know, watching charts and trying to predict if it's going to go up or down or whatever. I have switched to, again, things that I think, you know, hopefully will in a long term do well.
Yes, me too, man. Yeah, I have multiple currencies, and it's just we'll get into the topic too in just a moment, but yeah, it's just things that I actually believe in personally, like something like Filecoin, right? And I'm not suggesting anybody get that, right? I'm just picking
is that
something.
A Depop endorsement? No, just joking.
Yeah, right. My God, no. But yeah, you know, I love their idea of what they're doing with the storage blockchain thing they're doing, right? But if you look at it, I was looking at it, I think they're like, if you look at price, which is not, again, not my thing, right? But I'm not concerned about that, really. It's just not. I have a job, right? But I was looking, it's like down 4,122%, and I'm like, my goodness. I mean, holy, I still believe in it, right? But I'm like, that's kind of rough, you know? Like, everything's down, but that is just bad.
That is just way down.
Yeah. Oh, man. That's funny. But yeah, okay. So the topic, I appreciate specific you guys joining. I actually, Sam, I'm sure I know. I wanted to, maybe we could just talk about the ledger thing first, and then we can get into the personal continuity planning or personal security planning. Because I know Sir Corin, I saw you did some stuff with Technology Poet and Sam and Christoph. I'm sure you guys have great input here as well. But I just want to talk about that real quick for anybody listening to the recording. Maybe that would be a fun first thing for them to listen to, our quick perspectives. Maybe we'll spend like 5 minutes on that, then get into the main topic, and then we can go back to that or whatever other topic. But I'll start off. I actually did a interview thing, whatever you want to call it, with Paul on Friday, which was really awesome. I love that guy, and that was fun to do. But, you know, he asked me about my thoughts, and I think it's pretty much similar to everybody else, right? But, you know, the concern – you know what? Actually, I'm not even going to share my ideas. I'd rather hear you guys talk. So I'm going to not share my ideas because I've talked about it so much, and I'm just going to see what you guys think about the situation. Maybe if each of you can give, like, the one key thing, the most important thing that stuck out to you with the ledger recover situation. Whoever wants to go first. Maybe Sam.
Yeah,
or
one sec.
Sir Corin.
Oh, I was going to say one sec. I got to deal with kids real quick.
Okay, man. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I guess I'll go first then. And I'll preface it by, you know, I will admit I have, even though it has been like, you know, the hot thing, I've done a little bit, you know, kind of trying to understand exactly what it is. I believe I've tried to be pretty neutral enough. But in saying that, I mean, I don't know, like for me, you know, years ago when I was first looking into it back in my day, you know, one of those stories, but like, you know, I was looking at, okay, getting into cryptocurrency and, you know, I was like, all right, well, I want a hardware wallet. And so I looked at the two and there definitely were a lot of things Ledger had, but ultimately, what I did like about Trezor was that their security chip was mostly open source as well. And it doesn't always mean that it's better. Like, open source is not always better. You know, it does matter like what the eyes are on it and who's providing feedback and if those people are, you know, skilled security or whatever researchers. But for me, that was really the big thing. All that being said, I mean, I think it seems like if I were going to say like the one thing to take away, would be that this concept of that it appears to be opt-in. And if that really is the implementation, it might not be as bad as initially it seems. But I think there's I still think there's just a lot of risk with that, you know, in many different ways. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think, again, just the fact that it's an opt-in, that everybody wouldn't necessarily have to do it. But it is kind of one of those uncomfortable things in a way of like, you know, that they could do that. And in all fairness, I mean, I don't know, right? Maybe it's equally possible on Trezor. It's just not discussed or as put out there. But more just from if it can be extracted from the device and stored somewhere, then, you know, kind of, and I think this is one of the things I saw in the last like 24 hours was kind of this comment of like, well, they could, if you're using the recovery, you know, be susceptible to court orders to surrender that to law enforcement or whoever. And then that becomes a whole, whole other matter as well. But yeah, again, I don't have like real deep. I'm really interested to see Christoph or hear Christoph and Sir Corin. I think they seem, at least from the comments I've been reading over the week, that they have a little more input on it. So,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Go ahead, Sir Corin.
Yeah. So I think like one of the primary issues, like I think generally it's kind of like a public relations thing, but just handling it poorly. Sam was saying, they mentioned saying before, like an old tweet saying that you couldn't extract it. And then now they're saying, oh, well, I guess you can. And then it was always possible. In hindsight, I guess it makes sense that it was always possible, but the fact that they said it wasn't is why a lot of people got upset. And yeah, generally speaking, like how they talked about, so they leaned heavily on like, yeah, we can extract this key, but it's encrypted, right? And it, the fact that they leaned on that so heavily bothered me because like, if you've got your private key and you loot, like, you lose your key, right? Like you lost your ledger or something and you're trying to use the recover feature. It can't be encrypted with the key that you lost because how would you ever decrypt it? And they were kind of dancing around the issue until a bunch of people pressed on them. And I think Charles talked about, oh, there's a symmetric key. And then a bunch of people were asking, okay, where is the symmetric key? And they kind of eventually led you to say, oh, it's on every single ledger device. So, I mean, the fact that they just kind of like explained it away in such kind of beat around the bush and they weren't upfront with it, I think that was what bothered me the most, and I'm not. Yeah, you know, I think a lot of other people were bothered by that too. The saving grace kind of is that it's an opt-in feature, and you can avoid most of this simply by, you know, not opting into it. But it's just kind of shady business practices in general, I think.
Yeah, I've so far completely 100% agree with both of you guys. Actually, Christoph, are you busy with the kids, or do you have a chance to give your thoughts on that?
I haven't been paying too much close attention, but I have a ledger and I kind of feel like, you know, like basically like call them pants down. Like, what do I do now? Like, what are my good options? I've seen Sir Curran, sorry if I butchered your name, talk about this Keystone wallet and, you know, some other options too. I heard guys talking about in OTG, Stake Pool, Telegram, like just general purpose, like Raspberry Pis and just general purpose, like, things, and then specializing it for, you know, crypto wallets. So just kind of wondering your thoughts on that.
So I got really interested in the Keystone wallet. I mean, mostly because I was looking for alternatives. You know, I'm a heavy Cardano user, pretty much the only things that support Cardano is Ledger and I think Trezor. I was really interested in Bitcoin, the passport thing, but they only support Bitcoin. I think there were a couple others, but they didn't support Cardano as
Yeah.
well. My issue for not going with Trezor is, I guess they don't have a secure element for storing the key. So if like somebody stole your Trezor, they could get it off the device pretty easily. That's what I've been told, at least. And then the other thing is that kind of had some recent controversy around like blocking certain UTXOs by partnering with Chainalysis. I don't know if any of you guys remember that, but you know, their hands aren't exactly clean either. So that's what pushed me towards Keystone Wallet.
That's a good point, Sir Corin. I forgot all about that key, that thing you just mentioned about Trezor. Yeah. I mean, okay. Yeah, we could dig more into this if you guys want. I mean, I know four folks like us have probably talked about this or thought about it at a minimum a whole lot this week and probably tired of it. I don't know. But, yeah, I mean, I agree with all you guys. My biggest things were their change of opinion, such as in their Twitter space. I wasn't there, like I said to everybody else, I was not there for the whole thing, right? But you know, to be fair, but for the part that I was there, I felt like their And Sir Corin, I think you might have talked about this. I don't want to put words in your mouth. Maybe you didn't. But their like answer kind of evolved where it started out as, yeah, there's no new there's a new feature, but no new attack vector. And as the questions came from ZK and other people, it kind of changed to, well, if you enable the feature, then yeah, okay, then maybe there's an attack vector. I just think that they weren't ready to communicate it. I think if they had just waited a little longer and worked this out a little more and considered the possible questions and the way they're delivering and stuff like that, it might be a different situation. I think that, and a couple of other things, right? I think their answer still isn't accurate because anytime that you add, and Sir Corin, you specifically being a pen tester would know this better than myself, and Sam with what you do probably as well. But anytime you add any kind of function or anything like that or an ability in the code, there is a potential for that to be compromised. It doesn't matter if Bob or Nancy enables it or not. The bad actor could probably circumvent that. Now, to be fair, we have no idea, right? But that's the point, is that hasn't been, you know, it's a brand new feature and it's not really out there yet or whatever. But the point is it hasn't been compromised yet. So we don't, like, it still has the chance, the opportunity is there for it to potentially be compromised, right? Whether it's enabled or not. And the challenge is because of some of the things they said too. Now, I hear a lot of sentiment going around about the concern, how it's more of a heightened concern that their firmware is not open source because of some of the answers they've given and things like that. Now it seems like, you know, like I said, more of a general sentiment concern that it isn't open source and people would like it to be now. I guess those are the few things that stuck out to me. I don't know if I said it any differently than you guys, or if you disagree with that.
I agree with that. I put my head down because you kind of touched on the thing I wanted to say, right? That is that if it can be enabled as an opt-in, what would concern me, and I think Sir Corin by like tenfold is more apt to maybe give an opinion on this, because it sounds like you, Sir Corin, do a lot more true penetration testing. I'm certainly more on the defense side, but anyway, right, the fact that it can be enabled and mixed with the fact that they use closed source or proprietary tech that is essentially, right, it falls in line in what I would consider security by obfuscation, right, or security by obscurity. So it's like, is there a zero day waiting to be found to where, it could be exploited that you could be forced to opt in through some means? Now, I don't know. I mean, for a device like this, I'm thinking it probably is secure enough that it would involve requiring, you know, physical control of the device and other things that, would make it a very, high damage, but lower probability type of attack. That's kind of my take. But yeah, I mean, I'm not like super thrilled about the proprietary for something like that and not being able to have third party people see it. And again, not that open source is always the right answer, but that's kind of my take.
So after thinking about how this could be exploited for almost a week now, the easiest thing that comes to my mind is just simply to do some reconnaissance and see if you can figure out or generate a list of users that are using this feature. And then you could do purely social engineering attacks. All you have to do at that point is to trick the KYC providers, right? So you could do something like send them an email pretending to be from, I forget what the company's names are, and then say, oh, we lost your KYC information. Please send us a new picture, something like that. Or sometimes what you do is you have, when you're trying to do the KYC thing, it'll send your PIN, do a two-factor authentication thing. It'll send a PIN to your phone or your email. You call them, you do a voice phishing type thing. You call them and say, okay, we're about to send you this email. Read me the number. They read you back the number and you punch it in. You fooled the KYC system. That's all you need to do now. You don't even need to worry about their PIN or having access to their device. You just restore it on your new ledger and you've got it. So
yeah.
It's pretty yikes.
Absolutely, Sir Corn. And a couple of things that you guys have said so far that really should be emphasized is what you just said about the social engineering. People always, you know, we talk a lot about don't let yourself get social engineering, but think about another example around sim jacking, and you know, as just another and maybe an easier example to understand, where you know somebody socially engineers your cell phone service provider to compromise and enable a sim on your behalf, right? That, I mean, somebody could socially engineer those three parties to compromise your phrase, right? Or, you know, something as Sam mentioned earlier, I think all of us have mentioned this at some point this week, but government intervention, right? I mean, that not just being compromised by bad actors. I mean, maybe you call it government bad actors. I don't know. I'm not getting into that. But, you know, I mean, the government, you know, think about the Apple thing that, and Sir Corn, I think you actually talked about this at one point, but the government thing, the thing that happened a handful of years ago, I don't know, 8 or 10 years ago or something, I forget, but where they tried to subpoena or request at least from Apple how their encryption method to decrypt an iPhone, right? Right. So that's something to consider as well, right?
Yeah, that was. Yep. I mean, the most noticeably done it repeatedly, and as far as I understand, they have, I think, always been told no. Don't quote me on that part, but yeah, the most notable was the San Bernardino shooters. I think it was husband and wife, but a dude and a girl, and yeah, they wanted Apple to unlock their two phones. Apple refused, and then. Ultimately, they went to a university. I won't name. I mean, I don't know if it's totally public knowledge, but they went to a university, and it took them a month to unlock both phones. But yeah, Apple refused. But yeah, I don't know. I mean,
so I wonder how did that make the news? Right? Did like some Apple employee report that they were requesting information? Do you guys know?
I don't remember.
So that's kind of like
I think Apple announced it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think they announced it themselves to say, hey, look, you know, just to be clear, we were asked by the FBI to do this thing and we said no.
Right. So that's kind of the thing I'd be even more worried about is like how many times has this happened and we haven't heard about it? Like, especially if they're going to agree to the request and turn over the information, they certainly would not like announce that to the public that they just caved.
Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Yeah.
Where's their canary token?
By the way, we just gave all your stuff to the government. Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. Oh, hey, Jarhead, you hopped up, sir. How are you doing this evening? It looks like you ate really well this weekend. I know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not quite done, as a matter of fact. So I'm a little busy right now. I'm getting the grill going. I'm trying a new double indirect method on the Kamado. So it's I'm doing something a little funky, but I want crispy skin on this spatchcock chicken. So,
yeah. Hell yeah! Well, one day we're gonna have a straight grilling Twitter space. We're just gonna swap ideas. We got to do that. Josh, hey, thanks for joining, man. I know you've been in here a few times. I think I invited you up to speak. You can hop up if you like, but you don't have to. Totally up to you. Before I move on. Christoph, we've all been talking a lot. Did you have anything else to add to this conversation before we get into the main topic here? Or I guess the second topic?
I'm not sure if you were talking about the ledger thing. You know, it's interesting. Is that the second topic?
The ledger was the first mini topic, but yeah.
Okay. I could talk a lot about it, but. You know, I'm more interested in hearing what you guys have to say because I don't work in this field. This is your expertise. So whatever you guys have to say about anything is I'm just here along for the ride. I just want to pop in and say hello. I am busy with hot shit. So.
Okay. Well, you keep listening. Be safe. Eat good. And we'll continue on. Okay. So for the main topic. So, you know, as in the slides that indicated that Sam continues to create for me, out of, you know, just being kind for me and creating these, last week we talked about business continuity and incident response planning and everything that goes into before that, during an actual incident, you know, using ransomware as an example and a lot of the post activities, et cetera. There's not really a lot of time spent to taking that ideology and that methodology, maybe is a better word, and putting it into the context of a personal security plan. So that's the main topic today. So, you know, and by the way, more credit to Sam. We were talking one day and he actually came up with that term, personal continuity planning. I'm like, oh, that sounds great. But the idea, and this is a lot of the things we'll talk about tonight are individual topics we've really talked about before in depth, but we're summarizing it into the perspective of a personal continuity plan. And I've really broke it down into two sections versus like a general business continuity plan has three categories, right? Prevention and detection before the incident happens, what you do during an incident, and all the post-incident activity. But I've just put it into two sections for easier understanding for personal continuity, where you have what happens before and then what you do if you get compromised, right? So without further ado, I'll just kind of read off the topics and generalize them and then open it up for other people to extrapolate or ask questions or whatever. But the first part is the prevention, right? Preventing yourself from being compromised. Now, there's a lot of things that go into it, or there's a lot of things that can be put into this. But I guess I'll preface this whole entire topic with, don't let these ideas or suggestions overwhelm you. And this is something I say to businesses all the time. You don't need to do all of these things right now, immediately today. You really don't need that mentality, because that mentality will serve you no good and overwhelm you and stress you out and confuse you. And it might deter you from really practicing long-term security. So my advice is to take these steps or this methodology and apply it in an order that is good for you. So, you know, take maybe one or two of the things that you feel like you're familiar with or that you want to tackle first and go for those. And then move on from there. And just do it in a progressive way. And, you know, as the catchphrase goes, right, take everything in moderation. But the first one is something that you should really do all of the time that will help you with all of these other points, right? And the first one is understanding threats, the different types of attacks out there and how to spot them. So understanding, all of the people in this space are into the blockchain technology, right? So being acutely aware of the types of attacks that our sector or business sector faces. This goes along with, so whatever you're into, right? If you're into gaming, be acutely aware of the types of attacks that happen in gaming. If you're very active on all of the different social media platforms, be acutely aware of all the different things that bad actors attempt on social media. Understanding what phishing and social engineering looks like, right? How to identify those things. Kind of the communication style of bad actors or obfuscation techniques around obfuscating or masking or, you know, changing one little character in a website address or URL or in a Twitter handle or in an email address or something like that. Or maybe, you know, things like how identifying potentially malicious websites and how do hyperlinks work. You know, if I, you know, always hover over a link, for example. So I'm not going to keep giving a million different examples, but the idea is just understanding the things that could, you know, I guess the attack vectors or the things that bad actors try. That'll help you a lot with, and that's something I talk about in one of my YouTube videos around my own personal thought process. I think that's actually the title of the video. But in my personal opinion, tools help you a lot, right? But really, truly, what helps you the most is being able to identify these threats and avoid them, right? If you can do that, that goes a very long way. But with that being said, I'll just recap some of the other ones. So securing your devices, ensuring you have obviously secure and long and complicated passwords, having password managers to manage that, because if you have different passwords everywhere and they're very complicated, it's hard to manage that. Updating your your devices so that you're getting security updates and security patches, making sure that you're having the proper authentication and multi-factor authentication, making sure that you're protecting your data itself. So data protection, whether you're encrypting your Windows laptop, or something that people don't think about a lot is encrypting your USB or removable media drives. There are removable media drives that you can buy with built-in encryption, or you can use software encryption tools. Your standard antivirus and firewall, and doing your backups routinely. Because if your device is compromised and you lose your data, it's just as important to have that backup data backed up so that you can properly restore it, or so that you as an individual do not have to pay the ransomware. Your online behavior, verifying the different sources out there, of different emails and links that you receive, maybe having VPN on if you absolutely have to use public Wi-Fi, or how you communicate to other people, sharing, being cognizant and aware of the type of personal information you're sharing with whoever, you know, publicly, and regularly reviewing all of the stuff that we'll talk about to ensure that you understand the things that you're doing, you understand how they work, and that you know how to use them, and that you could be, you know, more fine-tuned with what you're doing in the event that you do get compromised. So that is step one. I'll just pause there and open up the floor for anybody that has something to extrapolate on any of those points or things I didn't mention or questions. And any of you are welcome to go.
Okay, I'll go first.
Okay. I think Jarhead's burning his hands, Christoph's got kids, and Sir Corn's having a birthday party. Or...
I would say that I think when it comes to, you know, step one, which is really covering like the prevention or like preventing attacks. And so similar to an enterprise, incident response plan or, you know, disaster recovery plan, business continuity plan, right? Like that step would involve, you know, your policies and your procedures and that's for teams and companies. But when it comes to individuals, you're probably not writing a policy. You're probably not necessarily writing, full-on procedures like TTPs of how tactics, techniques, or procedures of how you're going to, go about executing all that stuff. But, you know, saying that, I think where for an individual, I think where the biggest value is just starting with some basic, and I would say threat modeling, right? Of course, I'm going to say that. But I mean, you know, to start with some basic understanding of what you have that is worth protecting, and walk through those steps. And, you know, I have told many people this from an individual perspective as well. You know, it's like just start writing down things that matter to you that you wouldn't want to have lost, damaged, destroyed, compromised, whatever, stolen, you know, did I say that? Anyway, right. So, and just write that list down and then try to think about, you know, what you can do to safeguard it. And so again, right, I'm not saying like an individual is going to go through and write a policy of, you know, what that incident response plan is and anything very formal like that, but just kind of get an idea of what is it that is most important for you to protect, to safeguard, and then have kind of an idea as you go through this prevention process of how you're going to protect it, right? So, you know, going off, what Macaroni just said, that like, you know, for this space, maybe specifically, we would talk about, you know, cryptocurrency, or crypto related assets as one thing. So of course, you know, an element of that might be how you're going to safeguard that crypto, your digital assets through a hardware wallet, right? Or through a cold wallet, and how you handle that seed phrase as the most valuable thing, potentially. And so, you know, how you think about safeguarding it. One, from the beginning, you know, there are a lot of best practices or, right, like you never enter it on a computer connected to the internet unless you're, you know, following Charles, you know, spin up a VM, you know, don't allow it to connect to the network or the base computer, you know, do this whole create the phrase and use Veracrypt or whatever else to Cleopatra to, you know, to do all this stuff anyway. I mean, but you know, so if, what are you going to do to protect that seed phrase initially, like when you create it at its generation, but then how are you going to protect it from then on? Right. So, you know, Macaroni, you said, right. So, I mean, there's phishing, there's malicious websites, there's malicious apps, you know, and things. And so, that could just be when you look at it, well, I want to, so what is worth protecting? My seed phrase, right? How are you going to protect that? You know, so, well, initially I'm going to write it on paper or, you know, follow Charles, you know, concept of this, you know, virtual machine and double encryption, you know, cold key, hot key kind of a thing. Whatever you're going to do, right? That's how you protect it initially, but then have a plan. Okay, how will I protect it moving forward? You know, well, anytime, and you can, I mean, write it down. I don't know, right? I mean, put it in your phone or whatever, and just have this anytime I'm going to enter my seed phrase on a computer, right? I'm going to stop and take this action. I'm going to review, why am I entering my seed phrase here? Right. What is going to happen when I enter it? And, you know, and whatever other questions that you might come, right. Is there a high probability that someone else might intercept it? Or is there a low trust with where I'm entering that key? Right. And so like, maybe that's your ongoing thing is anytime you enter it, you install a new browser and you want to put your, you know, browser-based wallet on there, right? And you're about to enter it, you know, still take that time to like, okay, right? Do I know that this app was the legitimate app? What is going to happen when I enter it? Why am I entering it? Right? And as long as you can answer all those questions that you've already determined prior, right? Not when you need it. And I think that's how it really plays into an incident response or a personal continuity plan, right? Of that you're getting ahead of it. So you have these things prepared. So when you're faced with something, you kind of know at least some of the basic steps that you should take to evaluate a situation. And I won't go on and on too much longer, but just as, you know, that's just an example with a seed phrase, some ways that you can kind of make a plan to do it. It may not take very long for you to come up with those, but then you can transition those. You can take that same concept and apply it to other things, you know, such as whatever, any other potential valuable that you want, you know, like pictures of your family or health records or whatever, right? And just think about those. Where are they stored, right? How are they protected? Can they be protected more completely in a way that I'm willing to live with on a, you know, whenever I need to use it basis? And then kind of go from there. So, and then I would double down on what Macaroni said, right? Like you don't have to start with everything all at once. You can just start with what's the most important to you. And then, you know, and apply only the security measures that you feel like you can maintain over time. And then you can add to those as you go and grow more confident in your own ability, or you grow more concerned with the level of security you need for it. Right. And then you adjust it as Macaroni said, you do your kind of regular review of that, of your security plan, of your personal continuity plan. And I'll end it there.
That is really great info, Sam, and I love the way you articulate things. I love it. Chains and Arnega, welcome to the space. I have not had the pleasure of meeting you two before, but we talk about all cybersecurity-related topics on here at a level where the majority of people can understand them. So we're really trying to make it accessible for everybody.
I think Arnega's been in here before.
Really? Well, my apologies, Arnega. Yeah, okay. I have three jobs and meet a lot of people. Sometimes I forget. My apologies, Arnega. Well, thanks for being here again. So for the people up here speaking, 30 seconds each, no more than that, because I do want to move on, and I know that we could all give 1 million examples, but if you had to just pick one cool thing that you could tell the listeners, hey, go check this thing out. This might be something cool for you. I have a million of them too, and it's really hard to pick one, but I'll just start off and say, did you know that if you have a Windows laptop with Pro Edition or above and you have BitLocker, BitLocker doesn't just encrypt your laptop, your desktop, but you can actually use BitLocker to encrypt your removable media USB devices. So if you have a USB where you're storing stuff on, you can actually use that to encrypt that and password protect it. So Sam, do you have a quick random suggestion? Not to put everybody on the spot.
But. I know. Put me on the spot. Oh, man. I guess I can come up with a cool tool that I like.
Do it.
But, okay, so this is a short plug, not associated with them. But I like Crypti, and I think I'm actually going to do a thread here probably this in the next couple days on it. But Crypti is a super secure like word processing application. And so John Osby is the creator of it. But anyway, what it does is it is a zero knowledge. It is all web-based, but you can download it as a progressive web app. But it allows you to write documents that are like double password protected, right? You log in and then you have an encryption key. Or decryption key, sorry. But I like Crypti for those documents where I don't want to go through like encrypting and decrypting on my device all the time. Like if it's something I'm using regularly. So if it's maybe just short of like critical to protect, but it's still something I want to, but I like it. Their encryption model is really good. It still makes it very protected. They have these other cool features. And like I said, I'll do a thread about it because it's been on my mind recently. But that would be maybe one thing where it's better than, making a Microsoft Word document and maybe password protecting it. It'd be a little more secure than that.
Cool. Great suggestion. Sir Corin, to put you on the spot, do you have one random thing out of the million things you might recommend, something cool for people to check out?
Yeah, not a cool tool, but like a good basic strategy, I guess, is combine defense in depth and diversification. Basically, assume that you're going to get burned and don't put all your eggs in one basket. So basically, like how I implement this is I have like one of each wallet, right? So I have like 10 different Cardano wallets, and I have a little bit in each of them, and I don't import the seed phrase into different wallets. Like I don't import the seed phrase from one wallet into another wallet. I keep them like in their own little silo. And then I try to use each wallet with a dApp and then not cross-pollinate that way. So like I'll have one wallet that works with Indigo. I'll have one wallet that works with Liquid Finance, et cetera, et cetera. So that way you kind of have, if you connect with a bad smart contract, if one of your wallet gets hacked, you lose a little bit of your stuff, but you still got, the rest of it is segregated. But pretty easy advice, but it's helpful, I think.
That's a great suggestion, and I think a lot of people don't practice that. I think that's a very cool suggestion. I like that one. Christoph, do you have something maybe you've played with or heard about or something that you might say, hey, check this out? If not, that's okay. You don't have to be put on the spot.
Honestly, I've picked up using a YubiKey for two-factor authentication, and I feel cool even just using it and saying it. It's just fun. Like I tap it in the back of my iPhone when I sign on to Twitter. I use it when I log on to, as many things as possible on my, laptop. Something I picked up through the ways, and I really enjoy even using it. It's just fun to use too.
I love that suggestion too. I'm actually touching my YubiKey 5C right now. Just, I don't even have it plugged in, not even using it. I'm just tapping it. Like, it's like a little habit. Yeah. Yeah. Jarhead, Sam will get to you in just a second, sir. Jarhead, do you have something random you've played with lately that, you know, keeping it PG? I know you're cooking, so if you don't chime in, that's okay.
What? You mean cybersecurity wise or?
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Or grilling. If you want to share something cool with grilling, go ahead.
I've done a couple things lately. I'm not going to say exactly what I did. I don't feel like I should share it publicly, but let's just say it has to deal with seed phrase safety and making it a little bit more secure and decentralized within my own life, which is bizarre, but still.
Okay, so the suggestion is to think about however you all are using your or maintaining your seed phrases right now and try to take the opportunity and suggestion to improve your security of how you're managing your seed phrase. How about that? Yeah,
that's right. I mean, that's pretty good. There are ways, there are different strategies. And, you know, if you want to use – just think about the people in your life. And look, I know that this is kind of counterintuitive or at least going against what we're trying to say here, but – you know, if you have a homie or you got a mom still or some shit like that, there are ways that you can mitigate the risk of you losing your seed phrase somehow, some way, and still keeping it really secure, if that makes sense.
I don't think that goes against it at all, Jarhead. I think you're right on point. It's, you know, I've said this 5 million times, but it's an individual risk tolerance balance, right? What security versus availability. And with that mentality, like you said, I mean, there are options out there to do that. Sam, what's up?
Okay. I know this is my second 30 second.
Okay.
But since on the topic of YubiKey, I would also say that you can on, and I know you can do it on Windows. Actually, you can do it on all three. So you can do it on Windows, Linux, and Mac OS. And you can actually set up your login as that YubiKey. So you have to log into your computer with the YubiKey. May not be for everyone, but I think that that is how I use it on Pop OS, my Linux distro. But, you know, it's just a handy thing. Another use of your YubiKey, you might want to back up, as in all cases. But I think that's a nice way to kind of make it a little harder for anyone to crack, but not necessarily much harder for you to get in, right?
That is I love that you said that. I actually use my YubiKey to log into my Linux and one of my Windows systems out of the, I don't know, I'm up to 7 computers in here. I don't know anymore. Not that you did this on purpose. You probably didn't do this at all, but you set me up to mention my YubiKey video. So on my YouTube channel, for the people listening, if you just go to youtube.com/@EpochSec, or if you just look up EpochSec on YouTube, I have the same logo on there, so you'll know that's the right YouTube channel. Actually, I have a YubiKey video on how to use it. Through that video, walk through actually setting it up to log into your system. But I do link another video in there to do that. So for you guys that mentioned that you have a YubiKey, by the way, if you're not using it to log into your system, watch my video and then watch the link that I share in there to go to the other video that show you how to set up to log in your computer. That's a great suggestion, Sam. Okay, so Marsho, welcome to the space. Thank you for listening. Just apologies to everybody that's heard this numerous times, but we talk about all things cybersecurity in here at a level for everybody to understand so that it is accessible to everybody. Arnega or anybody else, if you want to request to speak and hop up and join the conversation, you are welcome to do so. So without further ado, let's just move on to, I set these for an hour and I always go a very long time. So let me just get back on topic. So step 2 of your personal continuity, your personal security plan is, what do you do when you are compromised? So because I am getting very long-winded here, I'm just going to read these off and then we'll start the conversation. So some things to do when you are compromised. The immediate step, the very first thing that you should be doing is looking into things such as isolating that device. You might, such as disconnecting it from your Wi-Fi, or, you know, if it's a mobile device that's been compromised, disconnecting its data completely. Or if your laptop or your desktop at home you think has been compromised, disconnect that from, you know, isolate it as soon as possible, immediately, right? Turn it off, take it off your home internet connection or whatever, so that doesn't because so that you don't face the potential of that that malicious whatever it is of propagating, right? Because malware typically has things built in to propagate throughout other devices on the same network. So be careful with that, right? You want to really isolate it. And one of the terms that we use in business continuity, actually, I'm not sure if I can remember the term right now, but I talk about it all of the time to companies. But, you're not trying to eradicate it, but you're trying to contain it, right? So the idea is to contain that as fast as possible so it doesn't propagate and spread and cause other problems for you. You might want to contact a reputable professional. A lot of the people, not just myself, but a lot of the people that speak on this space, especially right now, have a lot of security experience. So you can reach out to people that you might know to help you out, or you might reach out to specific companies that help out individuals and not just businesses. Maybe, I think, Mad Security and Black Coke, and there are a lot of them, right? Just research security professionals and maybe consider talking to one of them way ahead of time, right? Don't wait until the moment that you're compromised. Talk to one of those people ahead of time and kind of build that relationship. Or maybe, you know, businesses, they typically buy retainers where they say, hey, I'm going to give you all this money and you give me a set of hours, I'll just use them whenever I need to, so I don't have to worry about that problem. I mean, sometimes you can do that as an individual, but at the very least, reach out to people and start building a relationship so you have that prepared ahead of time. You're not trying to figure that out in the middle of being compromised. Making sure that you're documenting everything. You really need to make sure you're documenting and writing down everything, whether screenshotting everything, copying messages, saving emails, because if you do reach out for help or legal advice or anything like that, you'll need that information. Making sure that you're doing other things after you've done all of this, right? Changing all of your passwords. I can go through the LastPass example, but I'm pretty sure we're all familiar with that. Changing your other authentication methods, not just your passwords. If for some reason you don't have multiple devices and can't afford to do that, to where you have your two-factor authentication on a separate device, right? And you have it on the same device for a variety of reasons, and that device is compromised, maybe your 2FA method could potentially be compromised, right? So consider rotating and changing everything that could be involved in that. Notifying relevant parties. So if maybe your bank has been compromised, or your service, or you've been, you know, your SIM has been, your SIM device and your mobile device has been compromised, or not your SIM device, but, you know, you faced SIM hijacking or SIM jacking. You know, reach out to your service provider, things like that. Whoever, you know, whatever thing you're using, if your account has been compromised, reach out to the relevant parties. Obviously, scanning for malware. We talk about just having a lot of the basic antivirus and firewalls and things like that enabled. But a lot, what you can do and what we do in incident responses a lot is increase the effectiveness of those that antivirus solutions, if you will, to be more aggressive in their scan. So a lot of times, you know, once you get to a point, you can maybe run a very aggressive scan on your system that might be more intrusive, but could potentially help you out. You might use a different AV solution to, you know, especially in a situation where you're compromised, it might be an opportunity to use multiple AV solutions to correlate their results. You know, updating your security, you know, after this has happened, you know, now that's a good opportunity to say, hey, how was I compromised? Where was my gap in my security that caused me to be compromised, if there was a gap? And how can I improve that, right? Where was the weakness? Reporting to agencies, right? So not just reporting to the relevant parties or reaching out to experts, but there might be times where you actually might need to reach out to your local law enforcement or government agencies, IC3 or a lot of the FBI tools that they have out there, things like that. Or I talk about in my web safety YouTube video, about how to report malicious websites, whether that's through like Google Safe Browsing or through the domain registrar themselves, where they actually register the website, whether that's GoDaddy or whatever the registrar is, right? You should always report it to them. So that's step two. I'll stop there. I've yet again got long-winded. I wish I could just stop doing that. But anyway, I'll open the floor for anybody that has any stuff to add to that. And wow, there have been a lot of people joining. Hey, we actually have Vanessa here. Wow, thank you for joining. Does anybody want to hop up and speak that has recently joined while I've been babbling for the last 5 minutes? So I'm just request to speak, and I'll happily invite you up. But Sam, maybe we'll go with you first while we're waiting to see if anybody wants to hop up.
Sure. So certainly a lot to cover, or you have covered a lot. And so I will go through all of it again, but I would stress that, you know, for this one, for this step, is you've been compromised, or you believe that you may have been compromised, right? And it could be either one. And so at that point, it's easy to freak out, right? And I mean, it even happens in enterprise. It's not just, you know, on an individual basis, and overreact, and kind of everything gets carried away very quickly to where there's chaos. And that's why, you know, I would go back to step one, which is the prevention. It's creating a plan and kind of having an idea. And it, you know, it's never going to be the right answer for every single point, or like every possible outcome that you might have, right? But just a framework that you can follow from that initial, you know, oh no, I just did, or X just happened, and then what do you do from there? And it's just taking, you know, some intentional steps. And Macaroni and I, and others, right, throughout the last several EpochSec, right, we've talked about it, of just taking a little bit of a pause to slow down, think about what you're doing before you take action. And in this case, you may not want to take too long to slow down before you take action, depending on what it is. But right, having at least some steps that you're going to do, right? So like, hey, the first thing when an incident occurs, if it is device related, right? It's an infected computer. It's a you know, something that's internet connected. Really, if it's you know, tied to a device, then I'm going to whatever, right? Cut off communication channels. So I'm going to stop the Wi-Fi, do whatever, right? You know, and if it's web-based, you know, I had a call from the bank, and right, and they asked me for my, you know, six-digit number, my whatever time-based SMS code, right? And then I realized that it wasn't my bank, right? Okay, well, you know, don't disconnect Wi-Fi. That's probably not the thing, but like the first step, what's the first step you're going to take? You know, you're going to go to your bank, and you're going to either call them, or you're going to go online, and you're going to, you know, try to address it if you can. But anyway, but it's just having a framework of like, what are your first steps, right? First, try to get at, and it doesn't have to be perfect, but a general idea of what happened and what you need to do or can do that you know of to address it. And then, yeah, following down all of the kind of steps as a guide that Macaroni just talked through, right? And maybe getting somebody else who you trust or is reputable. I know there were some mentions in the video that Macaroni did on EpochSec YouTube channel. So you can go through those, or just get somebody that you trust that's reputable to kind of, you know, hey, this is what happened, you know, I need your help. What do I do? You know, again, you know, go from there.
Absolutely, Sam. You nailed it on the head. And by the also, this is a good time to mention for everybody listening, My Holy Macaroni account in here is me. So if you're familiar, you may not be familiar with EpochSec, but I am Holy Macaroni, and EpochSec is just the account I use for my cybersecurity community support project. So if you're familiar with Holy Macaroni, that's me. Also, I've invited some of you to speak. You don't have to join. You can request whatever you're most comfortable with. But we'll go ahead and continue. Jarhead, you got your hand up.
Yeah, I'm curious, your attitude and also your way into cybersecurity, did it have to do with the military, you know, at all? And because a lot of the things that you talk about, you know, kind of come standard in the military. There's a standard operating procedure with everything that you do. It doesn't matter whether you're a grunt or, you know, you work on aircraft or you're in intel or anything. So I'm curious just about you yourself and, you know, how your life fits in with your previous experience.
That's a great question, Jarhead, and I'll try not to get long-winded about this, but that's a good point, because I did spend the last 26 years of my life has been 13 years of military and 13 years of cybersecurity, and both of them are extremely similar in the regards of, you know, like you said, standard operating procedures, following a methodical approach, having a heightened sense of awareness, right? A few of you on this call, along with me, have been forward deployed in either Afghanistan or Iraq, and you can attest to the fact that you have to have a heightened sense of awareness to save your life. And in addition to that, having a heightened sense of awareness in cybersecurity, or just in daily life, is extremely paramount nowadays, because everything is so interconnected nowadays. It's extremely important to have that heightened sense of awareness. You don't have to look at it as a bad thing or a scary thing, but it's just, you know, I would say this, just everything that I do in life, I'm always, the very first thing that's on my mind is how can this negatively impact me, or you know, and it's not that I'm just overly sensitive or nervous. It's just that I think it protects me and does a lot for me, and to have that mentality, right? If I'm, you know, I just had somebody over there the other day talking about, you know, getting a Generac system in my house, and you know, it's just a conversation about, you know, what that looks like and what it's going to cost. But the entire time I'm thinking, like, you know, is this, you know, everything that every word that comes out of that person's mouth, you know, what are they trying to actually say to me, right? And I'm just being cautious about that. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think everybody should do that. But I don't know if I'm getting off track. But yeah, no, to your point, yes.
Yeah, you're good. You're good.
Yeah,
you answered it right. I mean, I think the point is that reality is that we live in an increasingly complex world, right? Of systems that make our life a little bit easier, but we get further and further away from understanding how the systems actually work. And that's a difficulty of modern life.
100%, 100%, man. It's just a reality. Sir Corn, you got your hands up, sir.
Yeah, I think the original question you asked about was what to do in case you got hacked. And I think it's actually really similar to what we were talking about last week with incident response, right? So the personal security, the same ditty, Pickerel, P-I-C-E-R-L, I think it still applies. And for those of you that weren't here last week, Pickerel is preparation, identification, containment, eradication, recovery, and lessons learned. So assuming you just got hacked, you know, preparation, identification, you're out of those phases. Those are ongoing continuous phases. You've identified that you've been hacked. So the next thing you want to look at is containment, right? How do I stop this from getting worse? How do I prevent the attacker from getting more stuff? And I guess put it in the perspective of a cryptocurrency wallet. You know, let's say you come in and you find your wallet drained one day. Instead of panicking, try and go through, okay, did I have positions open on some smart contract? Is there a way I can close those positions and get those funds out? Was I multi-sig on some kind of DAO that I can tell them that they should change that signature and not trust that wallet anymore? Try to stop the bleeding whatever way you can. And once you've, and that's probably the most time sensitive step, right? And then once you've done that, you can move on to the other stuff like eradication. You know, if it was a virus, remove the virus, delete the wallet, you know, remove the software from your computer, whatever it is. And recovery is, you know, you set all your stuff back up, and lessons learned, you know, how do you prevent it from doing it again? So yeah, just remember that same ditty, Pickerel, if you're ever trying to, you know, in a panic mode because you got hacked. So just a little tidbit.
Yeah, I love that acronym. Yeah, that's great. That's a great way to remember everything. Okay, so and I'll just recap the the end part of this personal continuity or personal security plan with a couple of points, right? Step three is kind of your routine review. You're continuously needing security isn't, and this is something that we talk to businesses a lot about, but it absolutely applies to the individual identically, where you need to continuously be monitoring. Security isn't a set and forget thing. You need to continuously monitor your accounts, looking for abnormal behavior or unexpected alerts. We call that in cybersecurity, we call that normalization, right? So that you can more quickly identify something that is potentially malicious. You look like you understand what the routine stuff is that you should expect to see in all of your accounts or activity or whatever, so you can more quickly pick out something that looks abnormal. Educating yourself, right? Continuously being informed of incidents or attack vectors or things like that. Like the Ledger thing we talked about in the very beginning of the call, understanding what that is if you're using a Ledger device, right? Or if you're thinking about getting one, understanding what that is and how that could impact you. Bad actors are continuously 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. There are tons of bad actors out there continuously, nonstop, looking for new ways to compromise individuals and businesses, right? So it's on you to continuously educate yourself and being aware of new things, historical things, etc. Some key takeaways. We talked about this already, so I won't belabor the point, but this isn't an all-at-once thing. Just find the easiest thing for you first to attack or to tackle. Creating a deliberate personal continuity plan, right? Start small and build from there. And then always remember to stay calm. If you're compromised, do not get in a panic. Stay calm and take a measured approach to it. So I just want to close up with those key takeaway part right there, and so that I can open up the mic for anybody that wants to bring anything up. I saw, like I said, there have been a handful of people that have joined while I've been going through the last two steps. So in the very beginning of the space, we all talked in depth about the Ledger thing, Ledger Recover, that we've all beat the dead horse all week about this. But if anybody wants to hop up and ask anything about that, if you weren't here for that part, you are welcome to. If you want to ask anything and related to personal security or a personal continuity plan, or if you want to understand what that is, I'm glad to go through it again. Or if you have anything to add that you think we've missed so far on the space, go ahead and please bring it. So again, I'll open it up the mic for anybody up here to talk about whatever you want already speaking, and I'll just monitor to see if anybody else decides that they want to hop up and speak.
Real quick, man. I want to kind of hear like how you came about opening this space, hosting this space, and why it's important, and also what are you doing outside of just hosting a space? I think it might be valuable for some of the new people in the audience.
Thanks, Jarhead. And for the audience, I did not prompt Jarhead for that question. I'll keep this as brief as possible, because since last October, I've probably described this like 1,000 times, and I've been trying to practice how I can summarize it. But long story short, like I've already said, I've been in cybersecurity and in the military for a very long, very, very large part of my life. And I got into crypto a few years ago, and within the Cardano community, that's one of the communities that resonated the most with me. So I kind of stuck there and got really involved. Long story short, over the years, I've been involved in all kinds of facets, whether it's the IOG Discord and working with SBOs or testing out new things for other people, whatever it is, right? And I've been very active on Twitter and other social media, but I wanted to really find a way that I could do my part in the crypto community, not just Cardano. I'm here to help everybody, right? But I thought, well, there's all these people building smart contracts and developing stuff on the blockchain and stuff like that. And I'm like, I can't do that. That's not my skill set. But how can I play my part? Well, I'm in cybersecurity. So how can I help people out from that perspective? Well, I figured that out and I said, okay, well, I can just provide cybersecurity experience. you know, to be completely transparent, everybody enjoys being compensated for their time as well, right? So I didn't want to immediately turn it into a business to where I said, hey, Bob or Nancy or team A or B, before I can even work with you, we need to talk about how much this costs, right? I didn't want to have that hurdle or that roadblock. So I thought, well, let me try the Catalyst project thing, right? So I put in a project into Fund 9 of Cardano Catalyst, and that got approved, which is really wonderful, right? Yes, you're still paying for it because it's your rewards, but I don't have to have that conversation with you anymore. If you say you need my help, I'm here to help, right? So that's what really set with me well, and that worked, and that's kind of what that's really the answer to the question, right? And I've been doing this since the end of October last year. I spent all of October working on building my website because I'm not a website developer. And if you go to my website, which is epochsec.io, it's not the most beautiful thing, but it's very functional and you should be able to find everything very easily. But to the other part of that question, what am I doing? And I also want to mention people like yourself and Sam on here and Sir Corin, who have helped me out a lot, whether it's Sam creating slides and coming up with ideas or Sir Corin coming here and participating very frequently with his knowledge and stuff like that. So I've had a lot of support, I've very much appreciate that. But what else I'm doing, though, is, you know, what I've tried to do is cover as many mediums as possible, because everybody likes to consume information in a different way. Some people like a YouTube. I personally love YouTube because I pay for a YouTube subscription. I lock my phone, put it in the shower, and take a shower and listen to a video, right? Or some people prefer documentation. So I put all my documents on my epochsec.io website. But some people may not like the format of that, right? By the way, on there, for every document I do list on there, I put the MD5 and SHA-256 hashes. So if you know how to verify that, if you don't, I have a YouTube video on that actually. But you can identify that the file that I intended for you to download is that exact file and it's not a compromised file. But if you don't like that and you just want to read it on an easy to read website, I put it on Gitbook as well. So if you just go to gitbook.epochsec.io, you can find my documents on there as well. So I do documentation. I do these Twitter spaces once a week because some people prefer that. I also record these and post them on my website because I have a whole lot of people that just don't want to be on the space, on a Twitter space in general, but they do like to listen to the recordings. What else do I do? I have individual meetings. Some people just want to talk to me one-on-one, so I'll meet with individuals. I've met with tons of individuals individually. I've also met with teams. So I'll advise teams because maybe they don't have the budget allocation for a security part of their team. So I've helped people, teams, with just simple questions, or, you know, all the way from simple questions up to weekly meetings with teams. So it's a broad range of things that I'm doing with teams. So all of those things. There's probably something else I've missed for now. But the idea was I would start out with, you know, 10 hours a week or something that's manageable. I think at this point I'm up to 20 hours, maybe 25 by now, on top of my full-time job and part-time job. So, yeah. Thanks for asking that question, Jarhead, and I hope that helps everybody in terms of what I'm doing here and the other people helping me as well. Yeah. Oh, boy. That was a mouthful. Sir Corin, you got your hand up. What's up, sir?
Yeah, I noticed Vanessa had a question about 15 minutes ago she posted on the thing. Did anyone happen to see that?
I've just been too busy talking. I did not look at that. Vanessa, you should hop up and speak.
Well, I was going to say, so she says she's on desktop, so she can't speak, which makes a lot of sense.
For sure.
And I definitely agree that Elon needs to fix it. But yeah, her question is regarding antivirus. Can you talk about the risk versus benefit of an antivirus? Doesn't open up a new potential attack vector with low-level OS access? She's on a Mac, not Windows. Anyone want to take that?
Yeah, I got quite a bit to say on that. Sir Corin, I mean, do you want to jump on it first?
Sure, yeah. So my immediate thing is, like, the biggest risk could basically be just eating up system resources, right? So as far as I understand, like, I can't think of a time that anyone has ever exploited an antivirus to gain additional access, as opposed to just bypassing the antivirus to get access through, like, a different additional way. So, like, I think what they do, at least, so Mac is basically a, it's basically Linux, a BSD version of Linux, right, under the hood. So what it probably is for you know, how an antivirus would work is it basically just watch key parts of the file system, see if things get triggered. Like if things are touching kernel level files that shouldn't be, it would probably set off alerts thing. It would be scanning for signatures based on things you download, you know, behavioral heuristic type stuff. So it's not a whole lot of actual low level access. I honestly don't know if really any low level access is needed the more I think about it. But they could use up a lot of system resources, right? If it comes to like a lot of scanning files in real time and stuff, and every single website that you go to, it's constantly scanning. It could eat up a little bit of resources. To me, I think that's the biggest risk. You got anything else, Macaroni?
Yeah, I mean, I would just, you know, you said what I probably would have said, and I'll just reiterate what you said as an example, right? In a lot of the ransomware cases and forensics cases that I work in, a lot of times I'll get a question from the customer or the business saying, hey, why didn't this antivirus stop this ransomware? You know, and it's not as simple as, well, it just didn't work. It's typically something like, well, there's a feature in there to enable password protection where you need to put an additional password in to unlock it to make any changes, right? And they just won't have that enabled, something like that. So, yeah, the antivirus itself, I don't think is a vulnerability or a risk. It's the implementation of it and the configuration of it, right? Yeah, I probably had another point to make, but yeah. I guess that's how I'd answer it, yeah.
Yeah.
Sam, or anybody else? Yet?
I mean, I would echo everything, but for the sake of time, I mean, I would just add that, yeah, you know, having an antivirus can also have maybe the impact of like you feel like, okay, I can take I can do more risky behavior, and this may not be true for everybody, right? But some people may think, oh, I can take more risky behavior because I have an antivirus, you know, watching my back, and that shouldn't be the case, right? That you should be always careful of the activities you're taking, or the actions you're taking and the activities you're doing, right? Regardless of whether you have an antivirus or not. But I know, and I don't know if this is maybe where your question has come from. We won't find out because Elon hasn't enabled speaking from a desktop yet. But, right, there is the theoretical, like, okay, you're taking one company, the antivirus company, and now you're trusting them with a lot more, right? So like you're taking the trust off you behaving appropriately through your web browsing and everything else and what you're downloading and opening and doing on your computer, and you're trusting someone else. Sir Corin, I'm sure, has a lot more experience with the pen testing and seeing, you know, vulnerabilities exploited than I do. But I don't know of any time that it's really happened where they were exploited through that. And I mean, for Mac OS and Linux, especially kind of the Unix systems, I would say they generally do permissions, I think, better than Windows in general. And so that may also kind of help a little bit to prevent, you know, bad activities happening, even if you don't have an antivirus, as long as you're still generally, you know, acting in a safe way, because they're largely permission-based. Windows, and I think they've fixed it a little bit better in Windows 11, but they used to have you log in to the, you know, like the admin account, and unless you created a separate account without all the permissions, then you know, you kind of open yourself up to pretty much any exploit could do anything it wants with admin level. So
that actually, Sam, you made me think of two things actually. And to the point that the first point that you made, and that's actually something I actually had on my mind and didn't say it. And you said it very well. Antivirus, I guess one risk with antivirus is the false sense of security, in the sense that, like, in the idea that antivirus can help you, but in all the things that we talk about and the ways that you can secure yourself as an individual, no one thing is foolproof, right? So as a person using AV, you should never assume that AV you could just go willy-nilly, do whatever you want. That's going to protect you all of the time, right? That's absolutely not the case and is never going to be the case. So being just aware of the fact that you still need to do other things, you know, AV isn't the only thing that you need to do. But going back to antivirus, you know, having antivirus and the vulnerabilities or risks there, and this is not specific to antivirus, just is specific. It's actually relates to any application. And Sir Corin, maybe you've done pen testing around this kind of thing. I don't know, but it would be DLL injection. So typically every application, right, has DLL files. So with that comes along with processes that they launch, right? So typically antivirus solutions typically have something built in called arbitrary access rules, which will prevent other processes or applications from injecting themselves into that antivirus's own processes, right? And I'm getting a little technical here, and I'm trying my best to say it correctly, but in a simple way, to where, like, if your antivirus process is running, it's going to protect itself from something else injecting into that to compromise it, right? Pretty much all of the time when your computer is running, some process is injecting itself into some other process, mainly for information gathering, right? But if they're trying to do it for taking control over it or, you know, executing permission, you know, having permissions to execute something, antiviruses typically have mechanisms in to prevent that. But that can happen on any application. That's absolutely not specific to an antivirus application. It can happen to any application, right? Sam, go ahead. And Sir Corin, also after Sam, if you had anything to correct me on or add on to what I just said about that DLL injection thing, please go ahead. But Sam.
Yeah, well, if Sir Corin had something specific to that, I'd let him go first.
Sure, yeah. So, yeah, DLL injection is super common. And I guess trying to explain, or DLL hijacking, I guess, like, to explain what that is really is, like, you know, programs require libraries to function effectively. And if you can get the program to use some library that a malicious attacker wrote, and then the program loads normally, it could execute your library instead. Trying to simplify that as much as possible. And yeah, I definitely agree that that's probably, you know, one of the biggest risks that antivirus would face. I don't personally have any experience or knowledge of an antivirus software ever being the initial exploitation vector, like itself. But I know a lot of times, and I personally spent a lot of time trying to get past the antivirus. So that's usually the bigger hurdle to overcome, is trying to get some sort of payload onto a computer that the antivirus software is not going to detect.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead, Sam.
Yeah. So my comment is actually, and I wrote this down earlier because we got off the ledger topic, or, you know, we kind of ended that after the first little bit, and then we moved into the second main topic. But I just wanted to kind of go back and address, there was a question, and I think it was Christoph, might have been Sir Corin, but about, like, you know, so what about, you know, other solutions if you don't want to use a ledger, you don't want to use a Trezor, you know, and you want to kind of make your own thing out of either a Raspberry Pi or, you know, some other method. And I'm cautious on this, right? Because I don't know if there is necessarily a one right answer. I would say that for those methods of, like, kind of home hacking your own hardware wallet, if you can do it and you believe you can do it in a safe way, it might be, you know, a solid way to further control your seed phrase and your experience, you know, interacting with blockchains of any kind. But I don't know, even with instructions, I'm not sure that I would think that that's going to be highly practical for the average person. And I would say, in maybe kind of my just take on it, is even in general with the ledger thing, is do your research of what the best course of action that you can understand from whatever available reputable sources, and Macaroni, I, Sir Corin, Others, you know, we've talked about this in past episodes as well, of, you know, how to kind of assess those sources to see if they're reputable or not. But I would do your research before you take action. And I would say that as even with whatever is thought about Ledger, right, with their recovery that they may or may not have pulled back now, or as Sir Corin said, right, even with Trezor, they don't have a secure element. They use essentially like what your bank card or passport use with different security on a chip, but not in a secure element way, at least for now. But before you say, well, I don't trust Trezor or Ledger at all, or I don't trust Ledger and I don't want to go to Trezor, so I'm just going to, you know, whatever, hold it on a cold wallet or a hot wallet or something like that, right? I would take measured action until you kind of have a clear way of how you're going to protect that seed phrase. You know, I don't know. That's kind of just my take. Like, I don't know, maybe unpopular, but just circling back to that.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense, Sam. I don't really have much to add to that. I agree with you, but I was also trying to simultaneously read that article. Sir Corin, I think I saw you liked it. I'm not sure if you read it yet either. I saw that you shared, Vanessa. It was very hard to read that article and actually fully understand what they're saying while I'm also trying to do a space. But right off the bat, it looks like they were just talking about, you know, I mean, I guess it's indicative, you know, typically antivirus solutions and a lot of applications around that area use system level accounts, right? Which is pretty standard. But then, you know, the DLL hijacking part, I think we kind of talked about that. But Sir Corin, what you got?
Yeah, I was going to say, I was actually wrong about the not needing root or system level access. So the reason like antivirus would need it is because it's, if you're going to download malware into like system 32 or some system directory, right, it needs to be able to delete and quarantine that. So that's why it has to have high privileges to be able to access all those directories to, you know, delete things out of. So yeah, that article to me is really interesting. Like, I hadn't heard of antivirus before being used as like an initial foothold vector. So yeah, I was just typing up a response to it. That's what I was doing. So
I'll cool. Get back we'll keep. Bit. Yeah, keep typing that up, man. I'm curious what you have to say more about that in that message. But yeah, they do use system level system accounts, right? What am I trying to say? Yeah, I mean, there's, and for anybody not familiar with a typical IT environment, right? Like, you have domain administrator accounts and things like that too, which have a lot of high elevated privileges throughout a broad spectrum of the environment, typically most of the environment, if not all of it, right? But system level accounts are different. It's, man, there's, that's a whole entire space in itself, but yeah, I'll just stop there. My train of thought is going to get crazy here. Chains, I saw you requested to hop up to speak. I will invite you up. But Vanessa, I hope that gave some context to your points you're making. I know that Sir Corin said he's writing up some more stuff on it, but I hope that gave some helpful thoughts on that subject. Chains, you requested to speak. What you got? I'm not sure you actually hopped up or not. I'm not sure what happened. Sam, do you see Chains up here and rugging?
Yeah, I don't know if you are or if they are. It just says connecting in an infinite loop.
Okay, well, I'll hang out a little bit longer. See if he Chains, if you're still in here, you should probably completely disconnect and re-hop up in here. I'm not sure what's happening there, but yeah. What else? But the antivirus thing, like, I mean, I would say it's safer to use one than to not use one, right? Like, especially if you're just a novice person, just an average person using computers, and you're not very familiar with security. You know, the whole layered security, right? Use multiple different things. So don't just rely on antivirus. And, you know, what I suggest to a lot of people typically is to, you know, around the account thing is to, you know, when you set up your Windows account, when you have a new Windows system or your new Linux system or anything, you typically have elevated privileges on that main account you're setting up, right? We'll set up a secondary account with just average user permissions, you know, basically no permissions, you know, for lack of a better way of explaining that. But just set up a secondary account and make that account the account that you use all of the time, right? Versus, you know, using your main account that you first set up, which typically has administrator privileges. I wouldn't make that the same account that you use all of the time for logging into websites or doing routine activities and things like that, right? James, I was just babbling on while I gave you an opportunity to actually, Sam, do you have a point to make? We'll get to you in a moment, James.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to make a point on, I mean, I know in the discussion that I've read in the past about it, I mean, one of the things they've said too is often these antivirus will come with like some kind of network traffic analyzer as well. And so in the discussion on that is like, well, you know, so once again, now you're putting the trust into that company. So if you're using like Kaspersky or Bitdefender or you know, whatever else, McAfee, Norton, but like you're putting the trust into them because it would most likely necessitate that they have to strip the SSL as it arrives, scan it, and then deliver it. So they're, you know, one, it's kind of a privacy thing as well. Now they're seeing all of your traffic, you know, as well as, you know, any potential risk is like that SSL might be terminated or TLS might be terminated before it normally would once it's delivered in the browser. So, yeah, I'm going to have to go back and read this article probably right after this that Vanessa shared. But
yeah, and it's a great point. I mean, sure, there are absolutely risks there. I will say, and I'm not negating the risk of this by saying this, but I will say in the hundreds and hundreds of forensics cases I've worked in over the years, I've never seen that be a thing. But not that it isn't, right? I mean, and I talk a lot about how bad actors will use attack vectors and then they'll put them to the side when people get familiar with them and learn how to prevent them and things like that. And they'll put them to the side and recycle them later on down the road and things like that. So there's a lot of things that go into that, but that is a great thing that you brought up, Vanessa. Chains, what's up, man? How are you?
I'm good. I forgot how loud the headset gets when you step off and back onto the stage.
It's probably yeah, no, it's crazy.
I'm sitting here. I'm like, is it going to work? Bang! Yep, there it is. Didn't work the first time. So listening to you here, I think Jarhead remembers I was designing an app way last year, and I've kind of restructured that towards more of a metaverse directory with Web3 education is kind of the goal. So on that website, I love adding people's YouTube channels and even add you to the network when you're ready. But can I do that? Are you okay with me putting some of your information onto the website for people to be able to view and reach out to you for questions?
Yeah, I don't see any harm in that at all. And I appreciate that offer, James. Yeah. I'll look more into your stuff. I don't think I've had the chance to meet you before, but I'll look more into what you're doing. Obviously, I'm from a security background, right? So I'll look into you and get more familiar with you. Rightfully so, right? But I truly appreciate that, James. And yeah, absolutely, man. That would mean a lot to me.
Yeah, and that's kind of the goal of the website, just kind of have a space to access, get extra data. I'm actually using AI to get a lot of like educational information. And then I'm going to create a couple bots on the website to just kind of relay the data they've created. So it's really interesting. But cybersecurity is one topic I don't have a lot of connections in. And today I was like, well, it's a no-brainer. I got to get connected here with you.
That's awesome. That sounds awesome, James. Yeah, reach out to me more if you have any other questions or if you go to put my stuff on there and you have any questions for me or anything, just reach out to me. And to your point, yeah, security is kind of thing, a niche where there's not a lot of it in different areas. So I'm actually thinking of getting like a booth at CNFTCon and or other or whatever they're calling it now, but other events, and just trying to spread that awareness, because you know I think there's a good opportunity for that. But absolutely, James, thank you for coming up and sharing that, and that sounds great, man. Yeah. Yeah, do you have something else? You're more welcome to go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just going to end it here. I do a lot of development in, it sounds silly, but immersive websites, spatial computing, stuff like that. So if you ever want like to be connected to some of the those groups, we can get you a space set up in there and get some of your data connected to my site through that. So that's something else I've been working on is, you can go to the website and get a directory of people's 3D websites. There's a lot of value in that that people
awesome.
Haven't seen yet. So, yeah, there's more to it than just your YouTube. So once I get that going and get you a chance to look at it, that'll be cool.
Yeah, that sounds great. Yeah, and I'll shoot you a message and maybe we'll chat together one-on-one or something. And if I forget to do that and you don't hear from me for a few days, just ping me and remind me. It's not anything offensive. I just have three jobs and it's easy for me to forget something. But yeah, I would love to talk to you more, James. Yeah.
Cool. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. So, you know, let's see here. Does any Joker or Josh or, well, just anybody that I just want to give a chance for any of the listeners, if you've changed your mind and decided to hop up and speak, you are welcome to. I'll give you an opportunity here to request to speak. But in lieu of that, we're probably coming near the end of the space, unless, you know, again, if one of you hop up, I'll keep on going. But while I'm giving you all a few moments to do that, Sam, Jarhead, Christoph, Sirkor, and Chains, you guys have anything else that you think would be valuable to share here?
I actually got to bounce to go put kids to bed, but it's been fun, guys. I appreciate it. I'll be
next time.
Here.
Cool, man. Well, good luck doing
thank
that.
You all
so much. It's been a fun space. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Christoph. Okay. Well, we'll go ahead and close up then. Sam, Jarhead, Christoph, Chains, Sirkorin, Nessa, Joker, everybody listening. Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for today. I think it was a valuable space, and I hope everybody has a great rest of your evening on this Sunday, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, thanks for hosting the space, man. I'm glad I caught it.
Thanks, dude.
Been a lot of fun
Take
as
care.
Always.
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Y'all have a good one.